lots and lots of conversations about what democracy is, what it isn't, and whether or not it is in jeopardy. There is going to be a fascinating online event next Wednesday afternoon, put on by the Minnesota Humanities Center. It's called Debating Democracy, Then and Now, Reflections on a Contested Concept. Folks who attend will have the opportunity to engage with the panelists and fellow participants by asking questions and sharing thoughts in a communal chat box. The featured panelists include Michelle Moody Adams, who is a Joseph Strauss Professor of Political Philosophy and Legal Theory at Columbia University, James Kloppenberg, who is a Charles Warren Professor of History at Harvard, and our very own Tad Johnson, the Senior Director of American Indian Tribal Nations Relations at the University of Minnesota. And Tad joins us this morning on the phone. Hey, Tad, good morning. It's good to hear your voice again.
Hey, Lisa, how are you doing?
So, democracy has... There have been a lot of really interesting conversations about what the past 6 months, I'd say, for sure, maybe year, maybe you can even back it up further than that. But there have been a lot of fascinating conversations about what is happening to our democracy. Is it in line with democracy? Does it signal the end of democracy? As you approach the topic from your perspective, which is not only rooted in colonial history, it's also rooted in Native American history and Native American and tribal governments. What's your take on it?
Well, as you know, American Indians have an unusual history. We started off making treaties with the United States, and ultimately close to 400 of them. And American policy kind of got created, American Indian policy, because Indian tribes were very inconvenient to the westward movement. So as early as George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, the great founders of this republic, there was an interest in moving the Indians to the west, sort of the far side of the moon, which is the west of the Mississippi at that time. And it wasn't until Andrew Jackson that they started moving the southeastern tribes there. But from the internal part of tribal governance, tribes have inherent tribal sovereignty, so they govern themselves. And so they've always had a form of most of them. So I can't speak in general about 570 plus Indian tribes. Each one has a unique tribal government. Some are more democratic than others, but we frequently look at the history of federal Indian policy through the lens of American history, which has got this very vacillating, view of Native Americans. And so at one point, because tribes had significant military might, it was like, hey, let's make treaties of peace and friendship. And then it was like, well, why don't we remove you to the west? And then why don't we put you all on reservations? And then why don't we carve up the reservations into allotments and try to make you guys farmers and send all your kids to boarding schools? And then we hit the 20th century, and it was kind of like, maybe we should treat you more like governments and provide you with, you know, cookie-cutter constitutions, which is what they did in the Indian New Deal, as it's called, the Indian Reorganization Act. And then they took another swing in the 1950s, and the United States said, well, tell you what, I think we're going to terminate all the Indian tribes and cut off all the promises that we made under the treaties and in statutes. Starting around 1970, we began entering the era of tribal self-determination, thanks in large part to Richard Nixon. So anyway, that's where we've been ever since. And today, tribes are it's probably a a moment in history unlike any other right now, in that we have a Native American Secretary of Interior, and in Minnesota we have a Native American Lieutenant Governor, Native American, by the way, the Commissioner of Higher Education, Dennis Olson, has two, not one, but two master's degrees from UMD. So, and he's a member of the Fond du Lac band. So we've got all these folks in power. And now with the University of Minnesota, where we work, we have a president who's very interested in attempting to uncover a lot of truth that the university, some naughty things that the University of Minnesota has done to Indian people over the years. So anyway, I think we've been in this age of tribal self-determination where tribes are encouraged to kind of take back their own governments. And that's what's been going on since the latter part of the 70s and then through the better part of the 21st century. And so tribes are doing all kinds of things like reclaiming their names, reclaiming their food sovereignty. And so we're in this age where tribes are, you know, getting back to their own roots, getting back to their inherent tribal sovereignty, their own self-governing authorities, and the ability to take back their own lives, whether it's through, instead of eating commodity foods from the government, they're growing their own foods. And rather than taking the names that the government chose to use when they made treaties with them, they're changing the names back to their traditional names. So the Papago Indians of Arizona, which is Spanish for bean eaters, changed their name to their traditional name, which is Tohono O'odham, which is a, you know, beautiful Native American word. And a lot of tribes are doing that. So it's an age when tribes are reclaiming their democracy, reclaiming their own forms of government. Some of them are not exactly classic democracies. There's the pueblos have theocracies where the religious leaders are also the governmental leaders, and so there's no there's nothing you can say that fits to fits all Indian tribes except this: they all have sovereignty. They all have the ability to govern themselves. And so whether you're in upstate New York, where the tribal leaders get picked by clan mothers, or you're in Minnesota, where every couple of years we have tribal elections, no two governments are the same. And so, but what's happening, whether it's democracy or returning to traditional forms of government, today tribes are becoming more self-determined, more self-governing, more autonomous, and developing their own governmental systems, which is pretty much what self-determination should be all about.
Ted, where tribes intersect the United States as a whole, one of the fundamental aspects of democracy was the idea of representation, equal representation. And it seems as though we are on a cusp of, and I think in a sense, Native Americans were perhaps some of the latecomers to the party. But we are, when you mentioned all of the Native elected officials on the national level and, of course, on our state level, it seems as though, air quotes, minority populations are getting more representation. They're getting a seat at the table now so that they can have a say in the decisions made that affect their populations, and they can also offer some insight into considerations of their constituents that, you know, maybe nice white middle class folks hadn't thought about.
Yeah, that is a an important aspect of what's going on right now. And I think getting all those viewpoints at the table is important, not just the Native American, but the African American, the Asian American experience. And we've seen, terrible incidents against a lot of different groups over the last year, as you were mentioning. And I remember when, so I'm old enough to remember the latter part of the 70s when I entered the workforce and then through the 80s. And then in the 90s, we started getting more representation at the staff level of the federal government. And so I had a friend who's now deceased, but he was working for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So there's an entity called the Administration for Native Americans. And he told me that, and he was a very Native American looking guy. And there was a guy in pounding on the table, and he was like, "Hey, we pounded on the table during the 1970s. Now look around you. We're the people sitting behind the desks. You don't have to, we get the pounding on the table. Now we're in charge here. So, you know, no need to do that." Getting into the real areas where power is exercised, it's what's happening in the 21st century. So there were a couple of people in the 70s, one of them still alive, that, you know, wrote the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. They were congressional staffers, and nobody knows their names, but their names are Forrest Girard and Frank Ducheneau. And Forrest worked for Scoop Jackson, who you probably remember, Lisa, and Frank worked for Mo Udall. And they managed to turn those guys around, two Native American staffers, so that they became very pro-tribal sovereignty. And what ended up happening is those guys ended up writing the reversing the termination policy, writing the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, the Indian Child Welfare Act, the Indian Self-Determination Act, all these different acts. And Frank worked on the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. He was my first boss in Washington, so you can see there's a bit of hero worship going on here. But these are, you know, I'm hoping they won't be forgotten in history. But the next stage we thought we'd get to, and we're getting there now, is we're actually sitting in the position, the seats of power. So we have a Native American on the Supreme Court in Minnesota. We have a federal court judge. We have the federal magistrate that sits in Duluth is a white earth descendant. And so now we're actually sitting at the table. We're no longer just staff. We're actually, we have Peggy Flanagan as the lieutenant governor, who, you know, can wield some authority when it comes to Native American affairs. So yeah, as far as the United States democracy changing, getting Native Americans into these roles is going to change a whole bunch of things. A few years ago, there were four Native American women in the Minnesota House. Now there's one in the Senate for the second time. I think Skip Finn was in first, but now we've got Mary. Kunesh Poudin is in the state Senate, and we've got a couple people left in the House, and then we've got a lieutenant governor. So, you know, Indian people are stepping up, running for office, getting appointed, going to law school, going to, you know, schools of public policy, and et cetera. So we're stepping into these positions of power, that's bound to change something. I mean, having, you know, a Thurgood Marshall on the Supreme Court changed a lot of court decisions. So we haven't gotten to the Supreme Court yet, but we've gotten to the federal bench. A friend of mine, Diane Hamitawa, was the first Native American woman to be placed on the federal bench in Arizona. And she was a staffer for Senator McCain when I was working for Udall. So we worked on some Arizona issues together. But anyway, now she's a federal district court judge out of Arizona. And anyway, it's a unique moment in history, and it's been, you know, it's been great to live long enough to see these changes, and I think it will change the shape of American democracy. Having a Native American at the head of the Department of Interior, and which, you know, is about 170 years too late, if you ask me, but we finally got somebody in there. But everybody's like, well, yeah, the Bureau of Indian Affairs is there. Well, no, it's federal land. It's national parks, it's national monuments, it's mining, it's all kinds of other things. And having somebody in here in that position, who's one of the original stewards of the land, she's going to take a real different look at everything from mining to national parks to the Bureau of Land Management and the people. The Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is in the Interior Department, has this cradle-to-grave responsibility for Native American people. And so it's unlike any other agency. And as John Marshall said in some of the early U.S. cases, the relationship between the United States and tribes is unlike that between any other two people. So having an American Indian as Secretary of Interior, I think, is a huge step forward for understanding Indian affairs. And also, I think she's going to contribute a great deal to how we view the environment and public lands and public waters. So all of that is an incredible change. And I think historians will look back on that appointment as one of the more significant ones that President Biden's made.
Tad, thank you so very much for taking some time to talk with us. Of course, I got about 8 more questions, but we're running out of time. I appreciate you taking some time to share your insights with us, and we'll get some information up on our website. If you would like to join in this event, it's taking place next Wednesday, runs from 1 to 2:30, and it is put on by the Minnesota Humanities Center. Tad, thanks again so much for being our guest this morning.
Anytime, my friend.
Thanks.
Stay well.
Tad Johnson this morning. He is one of the 3 featured panelists for an online event called Debating Democracy Then and Now, Reflections on a Contested Concept. And again, we'll get information up on our website, so it will be easy for you to register to go if you would like to do that.